The Offside Rule, We Get It, is brought to you by Continental Tires.
Hello and welcome to the Offside Rule podcast. You have the three amigos, myself, Kate Borsay and Lindsay Hooper, just bringing you half an hour's worth of just unbelievable entertainment. Girls.
You've really picked us up there now. Have you got some jokes, Kate? Have you?
I haven't got any jokes. I've got some nice stories for you. But yes, I'm trying to think what would be unbelievable. But it's just nice to hear from three ladies of the football world, isn't it?
And that's what we are. And we're going to be talking, actually, about some very current topics over the last week and kind of putting our own twist on things, as we already do. The topics are Hipster United, Stuttering Star. We'll tell you about what that means in a moment, but we start with player poacher after Chelsea swooped in and took Pedro under the nose of Ed Woodward of Manchester United and basically made sure that he came to Chelsea instead of the Reds of Manchester.
And how do you feel about this? Because everyone knows who listens, you're a big Manchester United fan. How do you feel about that?
Everything happens for a reason. If he wanted to be with his buddy Fabregas, fine. He chose Chelsea. If his heart wasn't in Manchester, he'll soon see who will be coming out on top.
Did you hear about the stealth way that Chelsea approached this? As soon as there were little utterances that he may not be happy with going to Manchester United, Operation Pedro kicked in, according to the Telegraph. And they had Fabregas's partner approaching Pedro's partner. They had one of the senior directors at the club fly out to speak to Pedro to whisper a few words in his ear. So basically, Chelsea launched an all-out assault using Fabregas and his partner to their full potential.
And on the back of that, we've now heard some absurd rumours to do with Manchester United and where they are actually going to splash the cash. Mm. We're recording this way before transfer deadline day, so there's still some days to business to be done. And the big rumour, and I have to say for the first time, I actually laughed out loud at the radio when I was listening to this phone call, because TalkSport were revealing that now Manchester United in the running for Neymar. So Neymar's name's been mentioned.
Yeah.
Only like one of the biggest strikers in the world. And a caller came on who obviously was not a Manchester United fan, but I have to say had me in fits of hysterics, because he said, "Trying to get Neymar? I'm going to try and pull Rihanna, but we're not all going to get it, are we?" So I thought that was a really good way of summing up the fact that this is probably not going to happen, unless you have some inside scoop, Hayley McQueen.
Well, look at Peter Crouch and Abigail Clancy. He's punching above his weight and he managed to do it, and he's only what, Stoke?
Well, look at Shaqiri and Stoke. I mean, that's a pretty unbelievable capture, isn't it?
Exactly. Right, so that's going to be our first topic. We will move on after that to Stuttering Star. We're going to be looking at the teams at the bottom of the Championship, League One and League Two, who could potentially be in trouble. Those who have not got off to a good start and maybe surprising. And a manager that we think might be out of a job because of those bad starts. I'm going to look at League Two. Kate is going to take a look at League One. And Lindsay, your focus is on the Championship. There's also as well a team on Kate's doorstep, Hipster United. We love the story about Dulwich Hamlet FC, which should just be called Hipster United.
Now, I have to vouch for Kate Borsay here, because Hayley sent round the topics this week and said, "This hipster team and Kate, they're on your doorstep." Kate Borsay has been talking about Dulwich Hamlets to me in my ear for numerous weeks. You talked to me about this at the World Cup, didn't you?
Yeah, I've spoken about it for months, because I went to check out my local team at Champion Hill and was so taken aback by the support, by the age of the support. Terrific amount of youth there, girls and guys and families too, but just the youth support. Trendy young Dulwichites and Peckhamites are there, and you can buy a local craft beer. And I mean, it sounds, you know, someone up in Doncaster's going, "Oh, this sounds unbelievably poncy." But it's not. It's got a really good vibe to it. It's a really good sign. I've been pestering you to come and see them. So we are currently trying to organise an Offside Rule trip to Dulwich Hamlet.
She has been pestering me as well, because the truth about it is she's been a good friend and she was telling me there were lots of hot guys there. Yeah. That is what was going on.
So we've arranged to go and see the team in just a couple of weeks' time. So we're actually going to look at other clubs from the lower leagues and around the world, actually, who have a bit of cult status.
The female take on football.
So, girls, let's talk about delving into the past, where big-name players, or just a big news story, looked like a player was on track for joining one club and at the last minute changes his mind or something happens and signs for another. I have done the big breaking news back in 2008 was the one that first sprung to mind. But should we perhaps start with one of you two? I always go first because, you know, ladies first, age before beauty and all that. All about me. Oh, God. So, Linz, hit us with who you have.
I've gone for a theme here because you set this topic using Chelsea as the example. And we have another team in the Premier League that nickname is the Magpies. And what do magpies do? They steal other things. And you're thinking that I'm going down the route of talking about Newcastle, but I'm not. I'm just saying that Chelsea should be called the Magpies because I'm going to give you a theme of all hijacked deals that Chelsea have stolen. I've got loads of them, so we probably can't get through all of them. Let's do a Russian roulette from 1 to 6. Shout out a number. 4. Number 4, Arsenal wanted Juan Mata back in 2011. They put a club record offer of £18 million for the Valencia midfielder at the time. It was turned down. They wanted more. Chelsea swooped in, £23.5 million, and he signed a 5-year contract. What other number would you like, Hayley?
My lucky number 2.
Number 2, well, Chelsea also went for Willian, which you'll remember when he was set to go to Spurs. That occasion, Abramovich used his links, his Russian connections. He phoned the owner at Anzhi, who's Suleiman Kerimov. And even though Willian had a medical at Spurs, the £30 million target joined Chelsea, said he wanted to go there instead. That was number 2. Well, how many more do you want?
By the way, he also turned down Liverpool, Willian.
Oh, yeah. Pitching in with that. Any more numbers?
What a surprise he turned down Liverpool. What about 4?
You've had 4.
Oh, God. 5.
5. Iron Robin. Met Sir Alex Ferguson, you'll know this, Hayley. In London in 2003, they had a meeting. PSV turned down what they thought was a real cheeky offer. I think they said you wouldn't get that for his autograph, £5 million. Oh. Chelsea thought, you know what, that was a bit cheeky. We'll up it, £12.1 million. Then he won back-to-back titles with the Blues. Ooh.
Well, I've actually got one where Chelsea lost out on a player to the new money boys, Manchester City, back in 2008. It was the final day of the Premier League summer transfer window and Robinho moved to City for £33 million, signed on a 4-year deal. It was actually the same day that the club was bought out by the Arab investment company Abu Dhabi United Group. So they were taken over. They had new money. He had been linked with Chelsea all summer. There were even selling shirts with his name on it. But it was literally minutes into the transfer window. I was on air that night with Jim and I remember it well. It all happened. It was big breaking news. Where is he now? He's playing in China.
Yeah, they definitely dodged a bullet there, didn't they? On that same day, by the way, City lost out. So they gained with Robinho, but they lost out to Manchester United, who successfully outbid City for Berbatov. There you go. Liverpool. They have the worst luck when it comes to being, just like Spurs, really, when it comes to being usurped by a player for a better club, in inverted commas. You mentioned Willian, Gylfi Sigurdsson. We got duffed for him as well. Mohamed Salah, another Chelsea player. But he was very close to joining Liverpool. That didn't happen and Chelsea popped up instead. I'll leave the Chelsea ones out because you've probably got more of those, Lindsay. Shall I go back in time to talk about Gazza? There's quite a famous Gazza story, but I love it, so I'm going to repeat it. So you know that Manchester United came really, really close, and that's probably one of Ferguson's big regrets.
Yeah, he always says that, doesn't he, in interviews now. He's like, what is your biggest regret? And that is absolutely it. And he thinks that not just he was missing out on a great player, but I think he thought he could potentially be the man that could help him from all his problems and strife.
Yeah. Speaking of which, he was sat behind us, wasn't he, recently, Kate?
He was. Did we mention this on another podcast or not? No. He was sat behind us at the Community Shield.
He recognised us.
And we tried to get a photo, but we did one of those, like, you know, when you just get a bit kind of polite and really you should just... And it's unlike me, to be honest, to stand back.
You tiptoed. I did. Much.
I tiptoed, a bit like some clubs, and I lost out on the photo of Gazza. So let's go back to Gazza. Now, Sir Alex thought the deal was done. He was going off on holiday and he said to Gazza, I'll see you at the training ground when I'm back. because things didn't move as quickly in those days, but they did for Paul Gascoigne. As he was driving to Manchester, this is how Gazza reports it, he gets a call from the chairman of Tottenham who says, Paul, we'll give you $2,500 a week. Not only that, we'll buy your dad a house. So apparently Gascoigne said, Mum and Dad, Spurs are going to buy us a house. What do you think? Sounds good, says Gazza's dad. So Gazza said, all right then. Going a bit further, the dad calls back Gazza and says, it does sound like a good deal, but can I have a car as well? And so Gazza said, all right, well, I'm going to speak to the chairman again. So he spoke to Irving Scholar, the chairman at that time, and said, I'll accept, but can my dad have a BMW with a private number plate, please? Yeah, I'm sure we can sort that out, say Spurs. So, of course, Spurs sorted that out. Not only that, Gazza also thought, hang on a minute, I'm onto a good thing here. What else can I ask for? It wasn't him that asked. It was his sister who piped up in the background and said, can I have a sunbed as well? Back in the days when they were all the thing. So with private reg BMW number plate in his dad's car, with a house for him and his parents, and with the sunbed, Paul Gascoigne joined Spurs.
It's like an episode of The Generation Game. Did they have a speedboat as well?
A teddy bear.
A big one. John Obi Mikel was announced on Manchester United's website in 2005. He even has a picture at a press conference with him wearing a Manchester United shirt, but revealed later that he always wanted to go to Chelsea, had second thoughts, and he left Lynn Oslo, and Chelsea actually ended up paying compensation to United and to Lynn as well.
Well, United signed him for £4 million quid from Lynn, and then Chelsea bid £12 million. So actually, Man United gained massively from this deal, because from what I remember, they bought him for £4 million. Chelsea bought him off United for £12 million. So Lynn Oslo were the ones to miss out, really, I guess.
I guess. Two more. Loic Remy to Arsenal, but ended up at Chelsea. That was an £8 million deal quite recently. Finally, Petr Cech. I thought I'd bring this one up because people might have forgotten that Petr Cech was actually an Arsenal target originally. Mm. So go back to 2002, first time round, and Wenger actually passed up the chance to sign him because of some work permit issues. Went back in again in 2004 thinking, oh, I might have made an error there, I'm going to go and get him. And Chelsea then beat him to it. So Cech now ending up at Arsenal comes around full circle, but it was them that went in for him at the very start.
Thank you very much for rounding all that up. Let's hope that there's more excitement to come on Transfer Deadline Day, and the next podcast or the weeks after that we'll be looking back and digging into this transfers for our future stories.
By the way, we'll be covering Transfer Deadline Day in our usual legendary style. We don't like to blow our own trumpet much daily, but we do cover Transfer Deadline Day very well. So get on at Offside Rule Pod, and we're trying to create something of a transport departure and arrival board for the website. Go on to offsideruledpodcast.com on the day to find out if we've cracked it.
It does look fantastic, and I'll try and chip in myself because I'm on Transfer Deadline Day duty reporting. I have no idea which ground I'm going to be outside. I'm taking a punt that it's going to be Watford or Arsenal, I think, because that seems to be where I'm being sent a lot this season. But yeah, who knows where I'll be. I was at QPR the last time, and then the next day, Harry Redknapp resigned.
He saw you and thought, this is what I have to face every week. I'm out of here.
Especially after you see me with my face stuffed with the bacon and egg sandwich that they bring out in the morning. Yeah, it wasn't a pretty sight.
Hi, I'm Jeff Stelling, and you're listening to The Offside Rule. Three women talking about football. I'm used to listening to four old women talking about football on Saturday afternoons, so I'll definitely prefer this.
Talking of pretty sights, the fans at our favourite hipster United, Dulwich Hamlet FC, we're going to move on to this topic next to talk about some of the cooler clubs in the lower leagues and how they've managed to gain a bit of a cult status. I was going to say groovy cool. That's just not very cool, is it? The one I found, I have heard of them before, and I was trying to remember where I'd heard of them because they don cross and skull bones as their flag and their club emblem. And they are called St. Pauli. It might be Pauli, but I think it's Pauli, German team. They were actually promoted to the Bundesliga a good few years ago, but they have been down sort of in the bottoms of the leagues. They have been in existence since 1910, so they've been around quite a while. But they hail from the Red Light District. The club has a very unique progressive spirit. They said it's not about the money, it's about a lifestyle. So since the 1980s, loads of punks and squatters filled the terraces, which is quite cool. Yeah, the club's apparently now trying to balance its ethos with the realities of modern football. So it's got notorious black and white standard, this skull and crossbones. It's all very dark, all very cool. It's a working class district, and this is how they like it.
Another little fact about St. Pauli, as we're calling them, that they boast one of the biggest female fan bases in world football. So big up to them because of their anti-racist, anti-homophobic and anti-sexist nature.
Yeah, that's right. And hopefully lots of other clubs will follow suit, but it could be quite some time. But you're right. And I quite like this as well. St. Pauli, in 2006, hosted a World Cup for unrecognised nations. That's right. So they invited the likes of Tibet to come along and chance to raise their flags for independence. So there you have it. They even arranged a friendly with Cuba to show solidarity with Fidel Castro.
I'm going to go with Portland Thorns in the US women's football team that have got a huge mass following. So I've chosen these because if you think of the United States and the new league since it launched, Portland as a state in general has got a huge soccer following because their men's team do brilliantly. They've got a 10,000 waiting list for the Portland men's team. They've got a nickname, actually. I think they're called the Timbers, Portland Timbers. There's a 10,000 waiting list to get a season ticket to watch the Timbers. And then the Portland Thorns have got week in, week out, an average crowd of around 15,000 watching women's football, which is in excess of anything else around the world that can compete. They actually filled the stadium, the Providence Park Stadium, 20,000 seater after the World Cup.
Wow. Isn't that the home of Nike as well? I think Nike actually are in Portland, Oregon. That's why it's one of the coolest places that you can be, because all the hipsters are rocking it out with their ahead of the time sports gear.
There you go. You're just verifying that I've had a very good choice here in the cool stakes.
Jodie Taylor, of course, plays for Portland Thorns.
She's pretty cool.
She is pretty cool, as is Leanne Sanderson. She moved to Portland Thorns from Arsenal just after the World Cup.
As does Alex Morgan.
But with Leanne's sort of cool haircut, I can imagine she fits right in there.
Just to round off as well, I thought I'd mention that the really astonishing thing about this, because you can get in and you can be cool too, because it's not too late. Because you know, if you're too late joining the club, then suddenly you're not cool. But it's not too late, because this club, it's not even been going 2 years. Oh. So Portland Thorns aren't even 2 years old. The actual new women's soccer league in the States isn't 2 years old. And so to get over 15,000 as a crowd is a huge feat. So get in on the action. If you're over in the States, go and take in a game and get that atmosphere.
Now, when you're a youngster, right, and you're thinking about a cool football club to support or to follow, you might think about who your older sister supports or who your older brother supports. Maybe they're cool because someone older than you or your brother's mates support them, and so they automatically become cool, don't they? But for me, my very local football club became a rite of passage. This became something highly associated with coolness in my youth, not because of the actual team, but because you hadn't made it onto the social scene until, as a 13-year-old, you'd attended regularly Moreton Town's Friday night football club discos. That made Moreton Town FC the epitome of cool to me as a first... I had my first kiss there.
You know what? I've got such a story with this as well. One of my first boyfriends played for Gornal Athletic, which was our local team. And our first kiss, I was shoved under the headlights.
Well, dangerous.
He didn't really want to do it.
Shoved under the headlights as his mum's Renault revved up. Talking of which, funnily enough, I had my first kiss in the glare of my mother's headlights because I was running out of time to have this first kiss with a young boy named Stephen, and we were stood outside the club and it was a bit awkward, and this is the Friday night football club disco. We were desperate to have our first kiss, well, kind of, but we were skirting around the issue. And then when I saw my mum's Astra drive up towards the football club, I was like, right, come here, Stephen, we're having this kiss whether you like it or not. And we carried on kissing until the glare of my mum's headlights stopped us.
To him, like, you're a character in Coronation Street. Come here, Stephen.
So look, it was the epitome of cool. We all jumped around to House of Pain. We sat down to James. It was that age when we were dancing our little hearts out. We also did karaoke there as well. Another overriding memory is fiddling around with those poppers at the bottom of bodysuits. You know, in the kind of undercarriage.
Thank goodness you said bodysuit.
Undercarriage bit of your bodysuit. Remember when bodies came in and everyone wore a body and a pair of jeans? We just couldn't get the hang of those in the football club toilets because it was so dark in there. And the toilets were rank as well. Anyway, it's quite a sad ending to Moreton Town FC because the club had...
Didn't shut the disco down. What?
They actually did shut the disco after about 6 months, was I think some underage drinking was found to be had there. Although I can't qualify that, but I
oh yeah, that's what you can qualify.
That's what the Evesham Journal alluded to, anyway. But yes, quite a sad end, and that the clubhouse and the pavilion went into a state of disrepair. It was vandalised, and I found a bit of a news report just very quickly about what happened.
Did the graffiti say Kate and Steve was here in love forever?
No, I never graffitied.
IDST, if destroyed, still true.
So these vandals, they were particularly naughty. They shattered photos of old teams. They tried to light fires. They ripped the pool tables, green baize, and broke into the locker room. So the report goes, cupboards were ransacked and youth kits were strewn about. Plant pots broken, strip lighting smashed, and a vacuum cleaner broken and hurled on the floor. The hooligans also fouled the freezer.
Hooligans? The 13-year-old hooligans?
I don't know whether they were 13, but that's a sad end for Morton Tannity. But they were reborn, reincarnated as Morton Rangers. But they'll always be a special place in my heart for Morton Town FC.
Follow us on Twitter at Offside Rule Pod and like our page on Facebook. Simply type in the Offside Rule We Get In. There's only one of us.
Right, let's whiz through our final topic and look at actually teams who aren't doing very well at the moment. So let's head to you, Lindsay, for your championship roundup or a selected team or manager.
Well, this one came to me fairly quickly because on Saturday I was reporting from Fulham at Craven Cottage, home game versus Huddersfield Town. Now, Fulham, I went there with all grand expectations because although I knew they hadn't had their first win of the season, I think it's about time Fulham started to progress through the championship and really fight to be amongst the promoted teams again and fighting to get back into the Premier League. I think that's how the supporters feel. And judging by the performance on Saturday, they are way, way, way off that. I would be worried for Fulham at the moment. You talked about wanting to know about a manager who might be in trouble. I'd say Kit Simons is going to be that manager. I think he's in trouble. I know that the fans around me on Saturday were calling for his head already. I know that a lot of the downfall of Fulham was down to people like Felix Magath and a couple of managers before that. I think a lot of people have talked about ever since Martin Yol went in, really, since Roy Hodgson, when it was the glory days, Fulham have slowly been on a demise. They lost Danny Murphy as captain, and it seemed like slowly little bits have just clipped away at their confidence, at the club generally in terms of support as well. You looked around the stadium and there were half empty, you know, stands. It was really a shock.
Sad, yeah.
Yeah, really sad. So I think they obviously need to get a win under their belt. Where it's going to come from, I don't know. The one thing I will say is from watching that game, no team in the Championship is going to fear going to Craven Cottage at all. It does not feel like they're playing like the home side. It took them so long to get into that game on Saturday. It was Huddersfield who took the lead. They got a very, very late equaliser, which they were lucky to get. And I just think that they need to start bossing and dominating and taking a game to their opposition, especially when they're at home. I know that their away form hasn't been great either, because lots of people, when I tweeted at the weekend, jumped on the back and tweeted me and said, look, it isn't just their home form, it's the all-round form. It's such a shame, you know, from the time of them being in the Premier League, I think they've had enough time now to start to turn it around. So Fulham are the team that I've chosen to mention as having a lack of quality really in front of goal, but they really need to get their act in gear. But I will also in the Championship give a quick mention as well to Blackburn, who currently are in the bottom three. They've only got 2 points. They're yet to have a win as well. Gary Bowyer's side, who've always performed pretty well. I mean, they've always been mid-table or thereabouts, and you'd think that they would be kicking on to go for playoffs and promotion. I actually thought they had a fighting chance this season of being a team that were up there doing it. I'm going to say that I still think in this case there's cause for optimism. I think they've got the team, they've got the quality in the squad that they still could kick on. So Blackburn, I'll have a word of optimism. I think they can turn things round. Fulham, I'm going to say something needs to happen there quick.
Okay, I'm going to look at obviously League Two, and I'm going to focus on Dagenham and Redbridge. They're absolutely rock bottom. I could have gone for Newport County because obviously newly promoted to the league just over a season ago, having spent, was it 72 years out of the Football League, something like that. And Luton as well, how the, I was going to say the mighty have fallen, not quite the mighty, but how teams have just dropped down to the bottom, all in the bottom three. Luton, however, do have points. Dagenham and Redbridge have just the one point. They had their goal scorer of the last game. They were 1-0 up, sent off in the 77th minute, then conceded in the 90th minute. They were en route to their first points of the season following three defeats. They have conceded goals aplenty. When you look at the results so far, they lost 3-0 away at Portsmouth in the opening game of the season. They then had a bit of a tough match against Charlton, which was at the Valley in the Capital One Cup, conceded four. They did score, but out of the cup competition. They lost back-to-back home games against Leighton Orient and then Exeter as well. They did manage to score goals, so they do have that about them. However, big problem for them at the moment. Who'd have thought it? Two players in League Two being called up for international duty. So for a couple of weeks, they're going to have to do without two of their key players, Andre Bucco and Jack Connors. They've been called up by their respective countries. Connors for Republic of Ireland. He's in the under-21 squad for a friendly with Qatar. It's the big one. And Andre Bucco as well for Trinidad and Tobago. They're away at Mexico on September the 4th of International Weekend. And of course, they have training camps building up to that as well. Now, the manager in charge at the moment guided them to safety last season. And they finished ninth in the table, actually. So they were set for another mid-table finish. They looked sort of never a team to be pushing for promotion, but there or thereabouts, finishing at least in the top 10 or maybe even higher than last season, higher than ninth, would have been an achievement. He's had a bit of a nightmare. The chairman said, oh, I'm going to have my faith in you. He's given him a contract until the summer of 2017, and that would mark the 10-year anniversary of Dagenham's promotion to the Football League. So it won't be very good, will it, if unfortunately they continue with their troubles that they're having in the start of this season and aren't even in the Football League by 2017. Who knows what's going to happen? The chairman had said, hopefully we've got Burnett. It's going to take us forward into our 10th season. But at the moment, unfortunately, they're just they're having a bit of a mare. And it's one of those sides that you just did not expect to be down there. And you expected them. They've got real good goal-scoring quality up there as well for a League Two side to be scoring goals. They just cannot score. And unfortunately, rock bottom, -6 on goal difference already. So, yeah, things aren't looking great.
God, I feel like I'm going to add another level of depression to this podcast when talking about League One. I had a look at the four teams at the bottom of League One as we record this. Southend, Bradford, Colchester down there at the moment. Southend, well, look, they're struggling in League One, but they've only just been promoted there, so I'd expect to give them or them to need a bit of time to adjust. Bradford, not overly worried about Bradford. Phil Parkinson, very experienced. He knows what he needs to do. He needed to bring in some reinforcements and they're all adjusting, so I'm not worried about them. Colchester, just not getting good enough results. They're very experienced in League One, so again, not overly concerned about them. The team at the bottom, though, I am really concerned about, and it's not just what's happening on the field, it's what's happening off the field. There's something of a revolt going on in Blackpool. No big lights, ladies, not at all. Things are not looking good. 2010, 2011, they're in the Premier League. Right now, they're at the bottom of League One. And when we look at clubs spiralling down the leagues, and we can think of a few examples, Wolves. But they are recovering. They are recovering, Wolves. Well, it depends where you mark your success, doesn't it? I think everyone should aim for the top, Lindsay, personally.
It's going to get more difficult, isn't it?
Well, anyway, back to Blackpool. They're without a competitive win since January, without a victory away from Bloomfield Road since April 2014. The stats do not look good. Blackpool manager Neil McDonald, he's been in charge since the beginning of the season. Lee Clark couldn't do anything there last season. He resigned at the end of last season when they were relegated. He had a really poor win percentage, actually, so it all went wrong for him there as well. Neil McDonald says there's lots of optimism at the club, but I guess he's got to say that, but I'm not hearing it from anywhere else. The fans not happy. At the end of last season, there was a pitch invasion. They got charged for that and told to make sure that they be on their best behaviour from now on. So that's not good for the club. If anything happens there, then they could be in trouble in terms of having to play a game behind closed doors or perhaps penalties in terms of points.
It's an absolute travesty, and a team that not so long ago under Ian Holloway was in the top flight and had Premier League football to be in this state. It's been badly managed, badly run. There's been good money at that football club. What has happened there? And it actually risks Blackpool not existing as a football team. It really does. I think they are I would say they are the big team to watch that could potentially go out of business altogether. And no wonder there are protests by the fans, because what has happened to their poor club is unjustifiable. I don't think anyone can say how they've let this happen. I think someone really should be accountable.
Well, there was an attempted takeover by the Blackpool Supporters Trust, and Owen Oyston, the father of Carl, reacted really angrily to that and issued a statement saying, look, I have put money into this club. I didn't buy it for a pound. I bought it for a lot more. I've invested a lot more money. So there's a huge fallout, really, and I'm not going to...
But who handled it? Who handled the Premier League parachute payments? Who looked after that? Who made sure that there was a full squad in place for the start of every season when they've, you know, been threadbare?
And getting rid of managers as well, and knowing you need to pay them off, and
yeah, making silly signings, yeah.
I think that they've definitely made a few errors. The fans aren't happy. You can say a lot about the Oystons, and they've done a lot for the club, but at the same time, they are part of the reason why the club are in such dire straits at the moment. A Twitter account affiliated with the club issued expletives back in a tweet to a fan who asked them a question. So they're angry, and Blackpool have distanced themselves from that, but just bad PR after bad PR. And as Ian Holloway pointed out at the weekend, you know, you have to have a reason as a player why you'd want to go to a club, and why would you want to go to Blackpool at the moment? That, you know, they're just not capable of attracting anyone. The fans not just unhappy with Neil McDonald, the manager, but Neil Diamond too. Oh yes, because Blackpool decided it was a great idea to hold a Neil Diamond concert at the stadium just 3 weeks before the start of the season. Fans not happy about that either. So yeah, Blackpool, not good stuff at the moment.
Were they unruly Neil Diamond supporters? Did they leave the pitch in a state? I can't imagine all those 60-odd-year-olds leaving all their mess behind. Was
it every single Neil Diamond fan's fallen out with you now? I expect that there are tranches of them listening to this podcast right now too.
Right, what is good is our website and our Twitter. There are no expletives there. Everything is perfectly run, up to date. And 24/7, you can pretty much follow all of the news on there of our podcast. We have blogs, columns, European football. There's the Offside Daily. We used to feature Twitter topic of the week, of course, in our podcast. We occasionally delve in and bring that back to life on the website as well. Some of the features you can see online, five of the things that we've learned of the week. There's Manchester United needing attacking reinforcements, and Jack Butland, who I have in my fantasy football team, I'm very pleased to say, highlighted on our website because we have tipped him to be a future England number one. Or have we? Go and have a read of the article. Premier League predictions as well. We'll have a really good roundup of all the transfers too. And mentioning fantasy football there in a first podcast of the season, we of course made a debut 11, and we had a hat-trick scorer in there, didn't we, Kate?
Callum Wilson, yeah, very good there for New Boys United. We've been performing above average in terms of typical fantasy football teams, which is not bad considering they are all debutants.
So there you go. Well, thank you very much, Kate, for letting me host, and Lindsay as well for, you know, coming round to my flat and just entertaining me. But from the three bits of sweetness and light that you have here, it's a goodbye for now.
The Offside Rule, We Get It, is brought to you by Continental Tires.